Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
I'm Adam.
And we're definitely going to talk about Furiosa. There's probably a few other things. I don't even know where to start. You were just telling me you finished Fallout and Tales of the Jedi, both of which I've watched and talked about briefly. Mm-hmm. So we could start there, because I imagine anybody, like almost everybody, has watched Fallout at this point. I feel like it made such a splash.
It really did. With good reason. I mean, it's like, let's just start with like just the amazing budget that they gave them, because like, I don't know what the budget is, but I can guarantee you that it's a big number, because like a lot of this felt practical. And that's the Nolan touch, right? Like, we're starting to see that with both Jonathan and Christopher, is that it's that, like, thing, adherence to practical, which I fucking love. Like, the mech suit, like, the night suit, like, how it was, like, how they were always practical, and you could just tell, because it was lumbering, and it was, like, that astounded me. Like, just the budget alone, because it's not a, like, it dives you into the world, and it makes you feel like both, like, you know, it's an alt-50s, like, nuclear era, and also a, like, you know, a, like a desolated post-apocalyptic world that's been rebuilt, like, after the Fallout, right? And it's pretty fucking amazing, like, just, like, how deep it goes, right? Like, I was amazed by that. Like, that was the biggest thing that for me, was that I kept on going, is it gonna like let up? Is there going to be a moment where I'm gonna see the seams? And for eight episodes, none, at least to my eye test.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I have almost no interest in the games, only because I know they're so expansive and so deep, and
yeah,
it's just the kind of thing I have to avoid, because it will become my addiction and take over my life. So I've never fallen into those rabbit holes, but to like get to live in the world and not like, I appreciate that The Last of Us is adapting a story, but this is just a story set in that world, and what that must mean for fans of that world, rather than watch them like potentially butcher some specific character that somebody loves, and not that The Last of Us does that. It's got to be nice. Like I can't imagine. Like I can't. I'm trying to think of a game or even a book that I would be okay with, like, just living in the world and it not being about the characters.
You see, like there are brands, right? Like even the brands, like, there's always characters to, like you said, like, link in on or like attach to that, like, honestly, like, you're often kind of like, that's where your entry point is on the show, right? Or the adaptation. But here it's kind of wonderful, because you don't have that, but the world is so specific. It's kind of like the same world that they create because it's so, I can't explain it. Like when you watch it, you're like, oh yeah, like that. It's absolutely that, right? Like it's this whole thing of like there's a specificity to the world that you, like that is like, you know, oh God, how am I going to put this? That is very much Fallout, right? Like the combination of like late 50s into early 60s, more like late 50s, like super late 50s, like, you know, jaunty, like weird ass, like I don't, it's weird because it's the choices that they're doing. It's so, they're so sad, but it's a very specific, like, oh brother, where out thou kind of musical style that they use, but then it informs on everything. Like it's all sad, but it's weirdly funny sad because it's so just very specifically like 50s pop, but like at a certain point where it's run down as shit. Like I can't explain it, but it very much so is the style. Like they took the style, right? Like instead of doing a literal adaptation, they took the world, which is a genius move if you think about it, because like you said, it takes away the pain of, oh, they're going to get this character wrong. Oh, they're going to get that character wrong.
Well, and there's so much in the games where it's about your choices, right? So
yes,
like you wind up not really identifying with what they're doing. Whereas if they just introduce new characters into the world, it's a lot easier for you to just be like, oh, well, maybe that's not the choice I would have made in the game, but hell, here we are. You know, I'm following this guy's journey, you know. And Walton Goggins, man, like,
fuck.
This dude can do nothing wrong. Like,
no,
it's incredible. He is so good. And I'm assuming we're going to get more of the ghoul, but I would love to know more of like that backstory, which hopefully is going to continue to come. Cause so far he's really, I mean, we got a few other people in the flashbacks, but he's the only real like focused character in the pre-apocalypse. So,
though I can see them expanding to Hank now.
Yeah.
Though they really got to, like, okay, so one note, and maybe Bob Zemeckis this year with his Hank's Robin Wright movie, or Robin, Robin Wright, not Robin Wright. Hank's movie where it takes place like over 50 years and they're using the digital. Maybe Zemeckis can crack it because nobody has cracked it. It looked terrible. I'm like, you know what? Why didn't you just make him up? Like, you know, like McLaughlin is such that, like, you know, he's kind of ageless, like in a weird way, other than his gray hair. He kind of looks the same. You just put some makeup on him and do light. They did so much digital effects that it looked weird. It looked like it threw me the fuck off because it didn't, it looked like I know what it is. It's the fact that they can't shrink a widened face. Like your face widens regardless of what anybody thinks. Like as you grow old, your face widens. And that's what's happened to Kyle MacLachlan. He doesn't have that like Charlemagne, like cut from razor, like look anymore. I mean, that's 50 years, right? Like, or 40 years. So he's expanded. So it looks weird because it's like, you remember what they look like as youths, but it's not slimmer. It's just like this like weird AI wraparound, right? Like you're expecting at any moment to do that jaunty thing where if people move too quickly in an AI like face thing, it goes weird. Like that's exactly what I was expecting. But that being said, like just to go back, like I love the fact that Goggins doesn't have that, right? Like it hit him in the past. It's so weird because like they're mining a really very specific Hollywood era kind of thing, like era story for him, but it's so different, right? Like it, the whole Red Scare thing, but it's not even the Red Scare. It's like it's gotten him into like this weird, like put upon Hitchcockian spy thing, right? Like it's almost like the reverse of Notorious, where it's like he's the Ingrid Bergman character, right? Where he's the one that's spying on his wife that he loves, and he's very quickly finding out like that final scene. Good Lord, that's some of the best acting Goggins has done. Like where he's just his world is just shook by the fact that his wife is such a military contractor, like planning the end of the world. It's kind of like, he's been on a bender recently. Like But on the opposite sides of the spectrum, that's what amazes me, right? Like, you have Fallout on one side, but then you have the Righteous Gemstones on the other. And they're two very different characters. I mean, I don't know, man. Best dude to ever act without a nose. Like, seriously.
It's funny you bring up noses, because definitely going to talk about noses when we talk about
Furiosa. Oh, God, dude. Yes.
Tales of the Empire. I briefly talked about it, and I told you, like, hey, you might want to watch the last three before you watch the first three, because I got pretty bored with those first three. And
let's put it out there. Like, you were right. You were 100% right. I never doubt you when you tell me that kind of shit. So, like, I did, and it works. But here's the thing, like I'm very disappointed, because the Night Sisters and Morgan Elsbeth should have been something that I really wanted to deep dive into.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like it. I don't know, man. It just didn't. It felt like a cutscene, and Filoni stuff never feels like a cutscene. Like from a video game. Like, yeah. And that's the worst thing that you could possibly do, because it's like, they've always treated the Night Sisters so like with anything that Filoni does, right? Like, he handles it with, like, subtlety and grace. This is the first time where I was like, did John write this? Or did John plan out the story? Because this is not, this doesn't feel like, it's the first kind of real misstep, I feel, in the animated world. Like Clone Wars, like since the Clone Wars, because like that first season of Clone Wars, people don't remember. Like, people want to like praise and laud it, but like I go back.
First season was rough.
Oh man, really rough. Until the zombies, it's a rough fucking ride. And that's like 20 episodes in to a 30 episode season, right? Like, it's fucking rough. Like, until that and Cad Bane show up, which is literally at the end, like, it's a rough ride. And that's what it feels like for Tales of the Empire, for that one. Like it literally is, that's what surprised me, is it literally leads right up to, and we're going to talk about something else that leads right up to another movie, or to another piece of story. But this one, it just, like, I was like, oh. Okay, you could have put, like, that's why I said it's like a cutscene from a video game or a deleted scene from The Mandalorian. Like, we could have gotten all of this information on The Mandalorian in live action. And it'd actually be kind of cool, right? Like, spent the money on it, it just doesn't feel right. Like everything is like a wrong turn. It just doesn't feel right. Like I said, it just tonally, it just doesn't feel right. It feels too abbreviated. Is that the feeling that you got?
I don't know. I don't know if I'd say too abbreviated. Because I was bored. Like, by the midway through the second episode, I was so bored with just her arc. And I know, like, all of this stuff is like origin stories. We already know where all these characters are going, mm-hmm. to a degree, but like Elspeth's story, like, is over. So seeing an hour of like how she got there to begin with, it did nothing for me. Like, I feel like they could have truncated a lot of stuff, and it could have been an episode of the show.
Honestly, it really could have been. Like, it could have been. But, like, I don't know, man. Like, it's very weird, because it's like it just feels like the writing is off. Like, I want to be nice, but at the end of the day, I feel like that's what it is. For me, it's just a miss. It's like, from head to toe, it's a misstep of writing. Like, it just doesn't feel like it's there. It feels like they had to do it. Like it was almost like it's a forced studio note. Like, oh yeah, you know what you guys want to do? You want to do Tales of the Empire? Well, you have to do this. And it's like, okay, I don't know if anybody really wants to see that. And yeah. It's like, no. People want to see that. And it's like, no, not really, bro. Like, they really don't want to see it. I mean, no, they really do.
I think maybe part of it for me is that there's nothing to her story that, like, brought anything new to light for me.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? No, absolutely. Like, it was like, oh, this is exactly the kind of story I would have, like, just thought it was. Like, there's nothing new there. Whereas, like, the last three, which are basically an untold story. It's not necessarily stuff we knew. It's just, you know, stuff that fits in between the cracks. This having Bare Sophie, a character, you know, we've seen and loved, like a beloved Jedi recruited by the Empire, converted, you know, to the dark side, almost not completely, but like definitely seeing like the benefits of the dark side and kind of being tempted, and then watching her journey, like that's new, you know?
Yeah, that's very new. I almost wish that they had taken all six and told her story.
Oh God, yes. Like that was infinitely fascinating for me.
Yes. No, absolutely. Like it was interesting to watch because it's like that is what I want from post Revenge to New Hope. Like if you're going to fill up the if you're filling up the whole like area of like, okay, let's go ahead and fill up all the nooks and crannies of like how the Empire ended up the way that it did. Like those are the kinds of tales that I really want. Them to take a hold of and actually, whatchamacallit, to handle and stuff, and like to keep continuity with Meredith Salinger as Baroness. Like, that's kind of awesome, right? Like, you know, and telling something that's kind of like adjacent to Rebels and to Obi-Wan, where you're telling the tales of the Inquisitors. That's also interesting to me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not like, and then having Jason, like, I loved that, you know. They get Jason Isaacs to come back, like, and he looks like the Rebels version, not the weird, wonky ass Rupert Friend version of it.
Yeah,
that's just like his head looks like an egg, and you're like, what the fuck? Why is he looking like one of those dudes? I was like, no. So that was, I loved it. I loved the fact that how it twists everything, like how it goes at it sideways. And how it kind of like it reaffirms like what the best of the Jedi are, and not like what like the like it's always funny because like I kind of think like with this new era of Star Wars, especially in the animated series, they are doing no favors to the executive branch of the Jedi, right? Like Yoda, Mace Windu, Kaomundi, like all of the executive Jedis, they're doing no service to them whatsoever because they're just showing how bloated and stupid they were. Whereas like the ground level Jedis that approach that, like the good ones that approach the Force from like, it's a life thing. It's like a life force and not just like, let's go ahead and push things and do things like that. It really kind of sets that table between like the people that are fluxy about the, like, you know, fluxy about the, like the Force. And like, I like that. I really like that. I like it's kind of reclamating the Force. Like I do love that about this era of the, of storytelling, is that we've gotten away from the, even though we still use them, the midichlorian count and all of that stupid stuff, and just like a little box of what a Jedi can be. Like, oh yeah, let's crush things and let's move things and let's do flips and use our lightsaber. and getting to like the core of what a Jedi is and what the Force is, like at its beautiful core, and kind of course correcting it. I like that. I don't know about you, but like even here, I feel like it's in there because of Barriss and yeah. like how she ends up being. It's like she ends up being a healer and somebody who's like a refugee. Like it's almost like I hate using the Underground Railroad for Jedis or burgeoning Force users, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, do we think that we're going to get more of this, or like, do we even know if it was successful? Because I'll be honest with you, it doesn't feel like I've heard nothing on Star Wars social media about Tales of the Empire.
Yeah, I've seen a few people talk about it, but yeah, I don't know if it was as big as the previous the Tales of the Jedi.
So the Jedi, yeah.
But I wonder if they'll pivot, you know, and we'll get Tales of the Rebellion next, you know, kind of do like this.
Or Tales of the Bounty Hunters. Like yeah. the different aspects of, because they've already done one season, like it's going to be Tales of ... Like, right. it's not so much, I see that, like, Tales of the Bounty Hunters, like, that, I fucking want that. Like, I would love that. Like, just, like, what, you know what? There was something, like, it was, like, wasn't there a book, a collection of short stories that they did that was something similar to this? It was, like, it was in the, like, you know, mid-90s when like the Star Wars literature was like going off the hook, like Kevin J. Anderson and what's his name were writing things right, Zahn were writing things right and left. But I could have sworn that I had something, like I had a book. Oh, here it is. Yeah, Tales from the Empire. Like it's literally a book. Like it's a collection of short stories.
Okay.
And I think one of them was like a Boba Fett one. One was like Grand Admiral Thrawn. Like it was like a bunch of different things. It was telling stories about smugglers. It was kind of like I almost feel like when Lucas saw those, he was almost like, you know what? That's like my underworld. Like he's like, you know what? What if I told the stories of the underworld? And you remember like we've all seen the proof of concept stuff that he did before for his original Star Wars TV show that was supposed to focus on the underworld and stuff. And I almost wonder if like that's where it sparked from, because I remember it being like this deep thing where it wasn't telling Jedi stories, it wasn't telling rebellion stories, it was just literally telling like the criminal element stories.
Yeah.
And how they were getting away with all of this stuff during the days of the Empire. So that would be cool. That would be really cool. Like Tales from the Rebellion, Tales from the Bounty Hunters, yep. Tales from the Outer Rim. Yeah, that'd be cool. I'd like that. I'd really like that. That would make me a lot more understanding of this season than it would if they didn't and they continued back over to Tales of the Jedi.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I hope they continue it. Like I don't want this to be the end of the animated Star Wars universe, because we've had a lot of, like, despite the negatives, we have had a lot of great, some of the best Star Wars come yes. from the animated Star Wars universe. So I hope that Tales of the Empire is not the last. I mean, it aired almost right there with the end of Bad Batch, which you haven't gotten yeah. to yet. Won't spoil it. But yeah, I definitely want more animated stuff. Yeah, it might be time for a Clone Wars or even a Rebels revisit. So
because
after Bad Batch, I was just like, man, I mean, we've got the Acolyte coming, but. The live action stuff, and it's has been so hit or miss for me.
It really has. Like, it's, we'll see. We'll see. Like they're already like, you know, they're already pivoting and we already know this. Like, I mean, well, like the weirder part is that we also have a skeleton crew and there's not been a peep about that.
Yeah.
Even though we've heard so many people, like we've heard about the directors, we've heard like, you know, we've heard the cast, all this stuff, but we have not yet to see any footage from it, which worries me. But yeah, like after the Acolyte, this is the last bit of Star Wars for like a year or two. Like it feels like, unless, like I said, unless Acolyte decides like they renew it, because it's a completely different section of Star Wars. This isn't even the Star Wars that we know. So like, here's my problem. Like, can we talk about how the fact that they're going backwards and not forwards? And I want them to go fucking forwards. But I don't want them to go forward with Rey Skywalker and that stupid shit. Like, let's put that to bed and let's go ahead and go farther, because I kind of want to see what the future holds. I don't like going back into the past feels like, and they're like, you know, Acolyte is going way back. Like it's going back a couple, like it's going back what, pre Yoda. So it's like 800, 900 years beforehand. That's like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know, like it worries me that the next bit of familiar Star Wars that we're going to get is not until 2026, and it's going to be The Mandalorian and Grogu, like whatever movie that they have hold for us, but nothing else like Star Wars Prime or anything, like not an animated series, not anything, other than like I said, Skeleton Crew, but we honestly don't know about, like, I mean, they haven't even talked about Ahsoka yet. Like, which is kind of crazy, because it's like, isn't this supposed to be like the future of Star Wars? Like, aren't we supposed to be moving forward with this stuff? I don't know, man. Like, it's weird. Like, what is your thoughts on this? Do you think it's a shakeup inside, and because they took basically creative reins away from Kathy and gave it to Dave, that Dave is like in the lab basically figuring out what the hell to do next?
Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, that's definitely possible. I know that they have now said that the Mandalorian Grogu movie is the end of the Mandalorian saga. Like, that's going to be it for the TV. That's the finale of the show.
Okay.
So it seems like we're not going to get another season. We're just going to get the movie. Which, I mean, I'm okay with. The last season was very up and down. That kind of opens the door to move away from the middling stuff. Like, maybe we'll get this is the full setup, how Palpatine was able to return. Mm-hmm. And we're just kind of done with this for now. You know, a lot of these stories of stuff that could just be told via the comics or whatever, which they're actually, the comics are running out of room to mine as well, because they've been stuck on having to tell stories in between the films.
Like, yes,
the first Marvel series was set between
Star Wars and Empire.
Yeah, Star Wars, and then the second series is between Empire and Jedi, and like they're really running out of room. So they're gonna have to be able to do something. Otherwise you're gonna wind up with exactly what Dark Horse had.
Yes.
At some point you're just like, we've pushed all the edges we can push in all the areas we can. Like, it stops becoming canon and just becomes another like alternate universe, essentially, Star Wars thing.
Yeah, and then you're gonna have to do another reboot or right. another, like, this is not canon. To which, man, like, if they, like, I mean, which that's entirely possible, they might pivot from this, but this is the first time that they've only, like, before it could be clean, because there wasn't TV shows. There was only one, like, there was an animated TV show that they knew that they wanted to take as canon, but they wanted to throw away all of the books and the comics, yeah. right? Which was the which it sucks to say, but Disney making it cannon fodder was probably for the best because it was so convoluted and some of the stuff was really stupid, let's be honest. Like it was really stupid. It was like a copy of a copy of a copy, and we all know the multiplicity rule about those kinds of things and what it ends up being. But now you've got hours and hours of TV that you can't just throw away. You can't just throw, like, especially because of the fact that this is stuff that you hard carved into things and it was involved with creatives and people that, like, you're actually having running the show now, right? So it's kind of like I'm sitting here going, this is going to be weird, because you are right. They are literally, it's not even them. It's also the TV world where, like, and I know they're stopping the TV stuff, but it's like, how many more post-Jedi things can we do?
Yeah.
Like, how many more can we do? I don't mind it, but if you're going to make a narrative step, like, if you're going to make a narrative step back because of whatever, and we know the reasons why. We know the reasons why they went and did this. It's we've talked about it at great length with the J.J. Abrams of it all. But I don't know, like, it's not that I'm worried. It's just more I'm like, okay, so where are you going to go? What are you going to do? Because Dave is good at things, but, you know, if you have Dave running in circles over everything,
yeah,
and you're like,
yeah.
Right? Like, it's like edicts, right? Like, he's getting edicts to do to fill up gaps that people have made issues with. And it's like, you know, there's artful storytelling that you can do with that stuff. But if you're only getting that and you're not being able to move forward, like, in the future, like, hey, you know what? Maybe give me a new, like, give me that Rian Johnson series that we keep on talking, like, we, that has nothing to do with Jedis and all that stuff, and it's set in the like supposedly it's set in the future from what I understood, and it's away from the galaxy core. Like, maybe try something different. I would love that, right?
Yeah,
me too. Like, you know, but again, I don't know. Like, it just it feels weird, like, that we're coming to an end on certain things, and it really does. Like, I hate to say this because there's no announced animated projects, it feels like it's the end of Star Wars animation, even though it's not. We know that Dave is not going to let that happen, right?
Yeah.
But it still feels like it, at least to me. Like, how does it feel for you?
I mean, there's still a lot of stuff that they've said. Like, what's her name? Wonder Woman director, Patty Jenkins.
Patty Jenkins. Yeah,
has come back out and said, okay, well, you know, my slate is now clear. So I'm back on with Rogue Squadron, which, you know, we haven't seen a lot of movement other than her saying that. But so much of the project was stalled when it looked like she was not going to be able to do it because they were kind of pushing for a third Wonder Woman movie quickly. And so... I don't know that it feels like the end. It just feels, honestly, it feels a lot like what Warner Brothers was going through, and maybe not necessarily what Marvel's going through, but like, where do we go? Because nothing we've done lately has been huge, so they just don't really know what to do, what which areas to mine. With Star Wars, it's tough because, like, the things you think should go over well don't go over well always, and the things that you worry, you know, maybe won't take hold, like a lot of the animated stuff does wind up taking hold. So yeah, I think that they're probably just trying to figure it out, which, to Dave's credit, I like that we haven't had a shit ton of announcements. like, it's very close to the vest kind of thing.
Very much so.
Which very is something so. I think he and George both learned when they first announced the Clone Wars and the live action show back towards like the end of the prequels. He was like, we're going to do an animated series. We're going to do a live action show. And then like it just the live action show never materialized for George. And the animated show took so much longer than he thought it was going to take. So I think they both kind of learned their lesson on don't jump the gun in like showing what you're working on, just work on it. And when it's ready to go, then be like, oh yeah, then we have this.
Yeah. So like, don't do it until it's ready. Like, just don't like, just sit, just wait until it's completed or it's close to like until you have something, right?
Yeah.
Like, which would be nice. But yeah, I think that you're right in that. Like, it can't help but feel like that because of the output quality, I feel like.
Yeah, because of what we've had the last few years is like all these announcements, most of which have not come to pass. And it's like they have to keep their name in the headlines, you know, like, oh, we're going to do this with and that's been part of the problem is like all of these people want to be part of the hype machine. Like Marvel's fallen in it plenty as well. Warner Brothers for sure with DC fell in it heavy. Only because it seemed like everything Marvel announced, people would go nuts about, and they just wanted to get on in on the like, oh, we're part of this too, you know, and it all backfired in such a big way on literally all of them.
Yep.
So
well, yeah, because you can't make okay, so like that goes to the argument of hype, right? Like you cannot make a like for me, it feels like. You can't hype. You can't make hype inorganically. Does that make sense? Like you can't make
it. Like trying to create Barbenheimer. Like you can't create it. It just has to happen. You know
exactly.
And I'm surprised we haven't had some studio or marketing company try to recreate that this year yet. But like you know. Maybe we won't, but I feel like at some point somebody is going to be like, oh, it's like the new Barbenheimer. And it's like, yeah, that kind of just happened. You know, you can't force that. When you force it, people see through it and they're like, eh, I'm not buying into that. So
100%. It's like, but it also goes to like it's a larger conversation that I feel like is being had right now, which is that like existing IP versus new IP, like the sign of it, the war that we're going to be having is like an indication to me was this week, we got some really big news that Spielberg is working on an original, like big budget genre movie for summer of 2026. I mean, they already planted their poll. It was like Universal May 15th, 2026. That's Spielberg's fucking day. Like, and they're hyped enough about this original idea that they're giving him the full, like, you know, it's like almost like a Jurassic Park type move, right? Like we talked about that a couple of weeks ago, how like, you know, Spielberg got like basically got a blank check and he's like, no, I only need this much. I only need this much to make Jurassic Park. I don't need a lot. I need a lot, but I don't need that much. But the same thing happened. Like they were like, oh, you know, God is coming down from high on up and is going to make something big. And it's an original IP from everything that they said. And it might have something to do with UFO invasions and stuff, or it might be sci-fi. We don't actually know. All we know is, and it's not the best thing, David Koepp is his screenwriter, but that's his like screenwriter for all of his big event movies now, like over the last 20 years, right? Starting with Jurassic Park. Like Koepp has been involved with everything. like War of Worlds he was involved. Like he, I mean, he's like literally like his screenwriter, right? He was involved with the early like revisions of like, you know, Crystal Skull, and the late revisions, better or worse. But it's like Spielberg isn't going into IP mania. He's going into like, I'm going to make this original thing. And like, I feel like we're going to start getting this war of existing IP and people that are really going to go ahead and go hard into original IP, because we're, you know, what, who cares as long as it's good content, right? And not tired content. And that's the thing that we're warring against right now, right? Like it's it like Tales of the Empire is the prime example of it, right? Like, who the fuck asked for, like, who the fuck asked for that, like, you know, the retelling or the further expansions of these characters? Like, it's like, okay, so we're just taking existing characters now and just recycling things. Like, we're not trying to do stuff new. Like, it's part of the reason why I loved, you know, it's part of the reason why I liked, Jesus, I can't even think of what we just started talking about. My brain's deader than dead. what is it? What's the Goggins show? Jesus Christ, I can't think of it for the life
Fallout.
Of me. Fallout. Like, it's what I loved about Fallout, which was is that you just give me the world and you give me new characters and you give me new mythos. I don't know. Like, it really feels like we're at this weird jaunty stage where people are just recycling stuff because they think that it's going to win people adoration, which it doesn't. Like it doesn't guarantee box office success or hype, right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Marvel is in that. Now they've gotten this weird thing where, like, think about it. Like, X-Men 97 worked. It's the first thing that's really, really, really worked for them since, what, Spider-Man? Which is, like, weird because they don't like to claim those things because they're Sony deals, right? So they kind of take a hands-off, like a behind-the-scenes kind of thing to it, where it's like, okay, let Sony get all the hype for it so that they can be happy. But, like, literally, X-Men 97 is the first really kind of, like, across-the-board success since Spider-Man. And then before that, Endgame. So it's like, what do they do? What does Kevin do with that? He's like, I threw all this money at all of these TV shows and nobody fucking like they make a footprint for a couple of weeks and then they go away and then all of a sudden everybody comes back to them and they hate them. But then I do this like cheap ass show based off of another cheap ass show and we let creatives do whatever they want. They create like, you know, they do this rude razzle dazzle. And it's a hit. And it's like it's almost like Kevin has to go back and go, let me percolate on this for a while. Let me just like, let's take this success and like dissect it and what we did right and what we did wrong. I don't know. Like, it feels like Iron Man 2 era. Do you know what I mean by that? Like, like where we thought it was going to be one thing and then that movie kind of was a mess and we didn't want to admit it, but it was a mess. Because you can't do lightning in a bottle twice, though there were things that were good about it, but everybody was like, it's almost like that's where we are right now. We're like Iron Man 2, where you have to kind of figure out what you really, really need, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, it's a very weird situation. But an interesting one. I just don't know. At the end of the day with Star Wars, it's like, I don't like that a lot of it is not working, right? Because it's Star Wars. It should work. Like, there's a formula to it. And they're not, like, maybe that's it. They're not adhering to the formula. Or they're not trying to find the way, like, the ways that the formula works that you can bend it before it breaks.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know that you can break it. Like, you just have to, like, put it down for a while and come back to it because people are just like, oh, okay, you know, enough of that. So, I got to watch something last week that you have talked about, that I didn't text you that I watched it. So I out of I guess absolute boredom, I don't know. I watched Unfrosted. So I just got curious because I've seen like you were just like, I couldn't make it 20 minutes into this movie. And then I've seen other people's comments of like, oh, it's funny, but it's nothing. And so I was like, I don't know. I like everybody involved in this movie. Like I enjoy their work. So like maybe there's something here. And I mean, there really isn't.
No.
I don't think it's bad. I mean, it is bad, but I don't think they set out to make a good movie.
I've come to reckon reckon this. Like, I did this 20 years ago with I've determined, and he continually proves this to me, is that Jerry Seinfeld had one good idea. And that's fine, because when it's Seinfeld, you don't need to do anything else. You just keep on doing Comedians and Coffee. Because every time you dip into something, we get something like the B movie, or we get something like Unfrosted.
Yeah.
Let me tell you guys, there's a reason why you cannot find the B movie anywhere. That it's not on blue, like it barely came out on Blu-ray. You can buy it on Blu-ray, but you can't find it anywhere streaming. You know why that is? It's because it's about a woman that gets thirsty for a goddamn bee played by Jerry Seinfeld. Like, imagine the ego and hubris that you have that you make a fucking movie about a bee that looks like you, that sounds exactly like Jerry Seinfeld during the era where we just got out of Prime Jerry, and that's all he did in this movie. And it's all about is this woman who looks like a Pixar mom. Yes, she does look like a Pixar mom before Pixar moms were a thing. No, they were a thing back then because Miss Incredible was around the time. But imagine the arrogance that you have to have and the ego that you have to have to make a to write and produce and star in a movie, an animated movie that's supposed to be about a kid for kids, about a bee who gets like who like just like in any of his like in like everything in Jerry's TV show, except for in Jerry's TV show, it was funny. Where all of these beautiful women are dating him. Like, it's about a thirsty woman in love with a bee. That's fucking stupid. If the movie is fucking stupid, I would never mention it to Jerry because I think we all know that Jerry knew that he fucked up when he made the bee movie. Well, it was almost like, oh, 20 years has passed. Let me make another movie. Hold my beer. And just literally was like, just like for me at least, it was the fucking worst thing in the world. I was like, Jerry, you're better than this. You're better than every impulse that you
I
have.
mean, but is he? Like
No, he's not.
that's the thing. Like you want him to be, but
Yes.
like is he? Like
No, he's not.
Seinfeld's great,
Yes.
but it's not just Jerry Seinfeld. It's Larry David, it's Larry Charles. It's all of that whole writer's room. Like
It's Julia Louis-Dreyfus, it's
yeah,
Jason Alexander, it's
Michael
Kramer, is it
Richards,
Michael Richards, yeah.
who has a book coming out. Like I would be very interested to read it.
He's gonna have to reconcile with
He I read an interview with him, and like it's not my place to speak on like forgiveness or anything in that regard, but like very much in the way we were texting about losing Morgan Spurlock, who passed away last week to cancer. And he was somebody else who kind of just disappeared and like owned up to his actions, regretted his actions, and was like, okay, well, I understand that I can't be part of this anymore. And Michael Richards seems to understand that. Like he's sorry, he regrets it, but also understands that like that's the end. Like
Yes. Well, thankfully, but yeah, But like going back to the whole thing of it all, like Jerry, like I said, like I think I'm done with anything that isn't like him being an interviewer or right. him like him being involved with a document. Even a documentary, it's going to have to be very specific for me because it's just like I can't trust you, Jerry. Like you have the worst instincts when it comes to
narrative. He even narrative comedy, he does not have the ability to like rein it in, to like keep it focused. To like there's some weird subplots in this movie that I'm just like, I don't even understand where that came from. But I'll say this. I understand trying to make a movie in the vein of like the Zuckers and like that style. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't get a pass. It's just more of like a shoulder shrug. Like,
yes.
Okay. Like it was what it was. What was really fascinating to me is like his post or like when he was making his rounds to talk about the movie, like his rant about like he's a liberal guy, but even he thinks that this liberal like cancel culture stuff has gone too far and comedy can't be truly funny anymore. And like I read, you know, or saw headlines about a lot of that stuff, saw a couple of his interviews, and like whether you agree or disagree with him, like that's beside the point I'm about to make. Mm-hmm. He doesn't do any of that in this movie. So, like, I expected there to be something in the movie that was, like, a little, like, racy's not the right word, but, like, kind of pushing boundaries. Like, the most, like, kind of, the only thing in the movie I can think of that might be a little off-putting is the constant, like, is what's his name, the guy from Reno 911,
I can't even think of his name now.
He's playing a German scientist, and it's like,
yeah,
is he a Nazi? Like there's constant like hints that he's actually a Nazi, like he was in the war, like he was
Thomas Lennon.
Yeah,
Thomas Lennon. He's playing a real life person. Harold von Braun. Well, von Braun was a very famous Nazi rocket scientist. That's who he's played by.
Yeah.
I mean, this cast is like it's stacked with the amount of people that wanted to work with him. Was unreal, like, but it's just like it didn't make me laugh the first. I think I made it through 30 minutes and it didn't make me laugh at all. Like, there wasn't even a smile, Logan, not even a smile. Like, it's just dull as shit. And for a comedy that is supposed to be this weird kind of pranky, it's supposed to be like the trailer is so well made. Because I literally sat there and I'm like, this could be fucking funny. This could be fucking Jerry's like comeback. Like, but no, it's not. It's really not. Jesus Christ, is it not? Like, I just, but continue on. Like, I'm sorry. I interrupted you.
No, you're fine. The Christian Slater as the milkman.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like it was so bizarre, like it kind of got a little chuckle out of me, and he gets some stuff towards the end that I thought was pretty good. What's his name, our favorite dude Cyclops, is Jack LaLanne, James Marsden.
Yes,
I thought was interesting and also like kind of out of place in the movie, but like the whole time I was like, wait, they should just make a Jack LaLanne movie with James Marsden. Like, I want to see that, you know?
Yes. So,
you know, but yeah, it's mostly just a nothing thing.
Yeah.
So,
Yay.
So yeah, I'm kind of with you on I made it all the way through and I did get a few chuckles, but I am with you on the, like, what was this for? Like, who is this for? I don't know. You know, we're about to see a passion project from who was once considered one of the greatest directors and producers of all time, who hasn't done anything great in a while or anything in a while at all, who put up a shit ton of his own money to make a movie that, like, is, depending on what you read, an absolute mess or like a misunderstood masterpiece. And then there's Unfrosted. Like, who is, you know, I know that that's not the only two movies, but it's just like, at least Coppola was like, hey, I want to do this. I'm going to put all my money in there. And tried to do something. Whereas, like, this is Jerry's passion project. Like, really?
That's what fucking trips me out, is that this is what he thought that was gonna be, I'm gonna make a bold statement here. Fucking Sour Grapes is fucking 10 times the movie Unfrosted is.
Oh yeah,
10 times. Like, if you talk to me about comedic misunderstood comedic masterpieces, like, Sour Grapes would have to be in that conversation. And the reason why I'm mentioning this, guys, if you don't know Sour Grapes, maybe you should look it up, because that was a movie that was ripped a new one when it first came out. And it was from one of the creatives, the triumphant of Larry Charles. Like, it was Larry Charles's movie, but, like, you know, the triumphant of Seinfeld is Larry Charles, Larry David, and Jerry Seinfeld. Like, these are the comedic, that's the comedic cabal or triangle or pyramid that created Seinfeld. And he made this movie called Sour Grapes, starring Greg Burko and Steven Weber. And it's a bit of genius. Like, it's so simple in its execution that you, like, that everybody missed the point of how fucking genius this movie is. And I'll let you guys discover it if you can find it. That one is also, like, nowhere to be found on streaming. But you can find a DVD of it. It'll probably set you back about as much money as the 28 Days Later Blu-ray is setting people back right now. Look that up, guys. And you think that I'm crazy with my 6,000 Blu-rays. Fuckers. That's why you collect physical media, because there's going to be a point where something like 28 Days Later isn't around.
Like, I want to watch it. Like, I can't find it. So I watched something else besides Unfrosted. My friend Jess in Atlanta, who I did the Ted Lasso podcast with.
Yes.
She turned me on to Marvelous Miss Maisel. And then she hit me up the other day and said, have you watched Loot? And I was like, I don't know what Loot is. And she was like, it's on Apple Plus and it's Maya Rudolph. I was like, oh, this is the show where she's like the billionaire. Like, I remember seeing a trailer, and she was like, yeah, you got to watch it. It's hysterical. So, season two started a few weeks ago. It's almost, I think the finale's next week. So I watched all of season one of Loot. I'm a few episodes into season two. And while it's not brilliant, it's not Ted Lasso, it's not, I don't think it's breaking any barriers or anything like that. But Maya Rudolph is so delightful. And the cast of the show is so fantastic that, like, I just want to hang out with them. You know?
Yeah. Ron Fuchs steals the fucking show in this, playing her cousin.
Yeah.
Him and fucking Dave Chen, who shows up occasionally, who is what's her name? Is it Maya? No, it's not Maya. Like, I can't remember what Maya's name is in Loot. We watch that. We love Loot. Like, it's a delightful 30 minutes of show. And Molly. It's a delightful 30 minutes of a show that you kind of, like, you kind of start vibing on. How far are you into season two? Have you found out what, like, has Arthur and Howard figured out what Howard's, like, thing is going to be?
So that's the episode I just watched is Arthur, played by Nat Faxon, who is an actor that, like, for me, goes wholly unappreciated.
Like, oh, yeah.
He can do, like nerdy, like, nebbish kind of, like, whiny, like, stuff. But then he can also do, like, you know, like, dude kind of stuff.
Well, he's in... Like, I figure that you truly started to fall creatively in love with him in one of the movies that you love, the way Misunderstood.
Yeah.
Yes, The Way, Way Back.
Yeah.
He's great in that, too.
Yeah. You know, and like, he's playing kind of, not really a man's man, but he is kind of playing, like, a dude-ish dude. Like, he's not, like, nerdy, geeky kind of... like this version of him. But yeah, I love Nat Faxon. So him and Ron, when they're together, like it's delightful. But yeah, the episode I literally just watched before we started recording was they went to the little small wrestling show. And Arthur was like, "Don't sell your stuff. I'm going to invest. This is what you should be doing. You should become a wrestling promoter." So I'm excited to see where that story goes, but like, and Molly's storyline in the episode, like the whole thing with her and, Nicholas, her assistant, where she invites his parents and then he like blows up at her and she's like, "I don't need anybody. I can do all this myself." And she winds up locking herself in the panic room with the smoke detector that won't stop beeping.
It won't turn off. Yes.
Yeah.
It's so fucking good.
Yeah, it's really, really funny.
It does the right amount of, like, it does that 10-degree rule of, like, everything else is fine, but then there's this 10 degrees of the show that's fucking wild, that's fucking new and weird, but it's perfect, right? Like, and I feel like the 10% is never Molly's stuff, like, because her Molly stuff is very conventional, which it should be, right? But it's the side characters, right? It's like, it's like even her husband, played by Adam Scott, who, like,
doesn't often get a chance to play like a piece of shit character.
Yes. So,
like, him getting to play that, like, you can kind of see how he's just reveling in being a terrible person.
Absolutely. Well, have you gotten to the Benjamin Bratt episode yet?
No, that's the next episode.
Oh, good Lord. What I love about this show is that it absolutely knows how to use its guest stars to the fullest extent. Like, last year, it was Olivier Martinez and Jean-Pierre. Oh, my fucking God. Oh, man. I do really like the fact that they've managed to do one of my favorite tropes, but it's also one of my most hated tropes, which is the will they or won't they with Arthur and Molly.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, you know that there is no chance, but I still like them playing with it. Because I don't, like, maybe at the end that they'll get together, but they've done it in such a way that it's not like, okay, so, like, let's talk about you saw the season finale of Abbott Elementary, right? The party, which is a great episode. Like, it's a, like, I love when all, like, that's another cliche that I love, when they take the format and then they just completely fuck with it and give you something completely entirely different, even though you are only supposed to do that once a year. Like, you can only do that once a year, right? Like, after that, you cannot do it. You can't continually go outside too much. After work drinks is fine, but like a whole entire episode. But anywho, like, the will they or won't they kind of fucking ruined in that show. And I don't know where that's gonna lead, because as we all know, if you watched Moonlighting, which you should, if you haven't, watch it on fucking Hulu. They have some beautiful episodes now. I want it on Blu-ray. Hear me, Disney, Blu-ray. Like, Moonlighting, the complete series, fucking assholes. But it ruins it. The will they or won't they dance works only because there's impossibilities, right? And my favorite part about loot is like there's an ocean between those two. And there's no way that these two are going to get together. And so you know that. So it kind of makes it, for me, it settles me into a very nice kind of rhythm for them where I get the almost of it. So it's not too sentimental, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, because I will be genuinely shocked if they get Arthur and Molly together at the end of however long this show runs for.
And the identity of those characters isn't so wrapped up in the, like, will they, won't they thing.
There won't that, they. Yeah, it's not a Jim and Pam thing. Like, which, yeah. Like, you know, again, Abbott Elementary, they've made so many good moves so far. And maybe I'm just not seeing it, but I feel like Janine and Gregory... you kind of probably are going to ruin the will they, like, you just ruined the will they or won't they, but also additionally, like, their identities are so wrapped up, like you said, like, yeah, in the will they or won't they, that you've kind of collapsed it, but maybe that's what you wanted to do. I don't know. Like, what I do know is that Quinta Brunson is a amazing writer, and she's, yeah, like, so I trust her, so I'm going to go along with it. The same way that like the creatives for Loot, if they were to do something like that, I wouldn't be like, Alan Yang is a guy who I really loved. I mean, I know that we can't talk about his we kind of can't talk about his other show, Master of None, anymore, because, well, I mean, is Aziz Ansari officially canceled, or is he coming back because he's got that Keanu movie?
Don't know.
Okay.
So, Alan Yang and Matt Hubbard are the two, I think the two people credited. Yeah. I'm with you. I dig a lot of the stuff these guys have done, like, mm-hmm, going back a while. Like, they both worked on Parks and Rec. Superstore, which was, kind of like in the, like, done by Justin Spitzer, mm-hmm, who was on Parks and Rec. Like, that's his show. They worked, yep, with him. The first show that, I think they created together was, a show on Amazon Prime called Forever.
Yes, where Maya Rudolph, where I feel like they really kind of clicked with Maya Rudolph and Fred Armiston. Interesting show. Very interesting show.
I thought it was fantastic. I wish it had gone further, but, like, I also understand, like, you know, it's not for everybody, and where do you go with that concept?
Well, it's like sometimes shows are just one or two seasons, right? And that's just the way that they should work. You know, but it's great. Like, it's a great show. And, like, you know, like, I feel like this is the evolution of that show, right? This is literally the other side of that show, because Forever is about a couple that thinks that they have everything and they decide to downsize. They want to downsize, like, they want that dream. But Loot is, like, literally the complete opposite. It's about somebody who has everything, and they're searching for substance, right? I mean, it's good things. Like, I'm glad that you found it, and you find it delightful, because that's what it is. It's delightful. It's not gonna change the world, right? It's just like, it's, you know what it is? It feels like these first two seasons, because they really haven't been discovered, feels like the way that Ted Lasso felt with the first two seasons. Where it's like, when you discover it, you're like, I like this. Why isn't anybody watching it? And then all of a sudden, everybody starts to watch it, right? I really do like this show. It's a really good show. It's about people trying to be good, which I love. Like, it very much so feels like a weird kind of spiritual cousin to Parks and Rec, right? Yeah. Like, in a weird, like, it's like Parks and Rec West Coast, because that's literally what it is. Like, whereas Parks and Rec is Midwest, Like, you know, if we were to, like, if it was like a CSI thing, it would literally be Parks and Rec, Los Angeles.
This idea that she's going to give away all her money, mm-hmm. but also she has no idea how to live, like, remotely normally. So, like,
yes.
What are you going to do when you have no money? Like, none of this stuff pays for itself. Like, you have a staff of hundreds that just, like, tend to your houses, you know? It's so... Like, I'm very interested to see what happens when they get to that point, you know? But yeah, it's absolutely delightful. I'm really, really enjoying it. I'll probably be caught up sometime this weekend because, I think the season finale is like Tuesday or something. Yes. So I'll be able to watch it when it airs. Okay. But yeah, really, really, really enjoying that show. That's the only things I've watched besides going to the theater yesterday afternoon to see Furiosa, a Mad Max saga, which you saw a week ago.
Yeah, I saw it about a week and a half ago or so. Yeah. So I've had time to really percolate. And my review is up on themovieisle.com if you guys want to read my review of it.
I specifically held off reading your review because I didn't want it to influence me going in. I did see our buddy Scott like mm-hmm. put up on his Facebook page, like, it's not, he's like, it's not, I'm not digging it the way a lot of other people are, but it's definitely worth watching. That was the lone review that I kind of read, and I was like, oh, well, I wasn't all in on Fury Road the way everybody else was. I understand why everybody went apeshit over it. It's an amazing piece of cinema, but mm-hmm. it's just not really my bag. So, I didn't have super high hopes for this. I just mm-hmm. wanted to be entertained. And, you know, for the most part I was. So, like, spoilers for, Furiosa, which, like, maybe I've just watched too much Harry Potter, but, like, every time I see the title or hear the title, all I can think about is Hermione and her saying, it's Leviosa, not Leviosa. Like, it's Furiosa. Like, every time I see it, that's all I think about is the way she condescends to them about how to say Wingardium Leviosa. So, I've watched too much Harry Potter. I don't know where to start with this movie because I didn't think it would be the movie that it was. Like, I thought I was getting.
let's start with that. Like, so, like, I've heard enough about this, I had heard enough about this production to know what this movie was going to be. So, like, let's start with the history of this movie. And, like, okay, so, like, first off, Scott's wrong. He's just dead wrong. I'm sorry, Scotty, if you listen to this. I haven't told you yet, but you're fucking wrong. Everything about your review is wrong. I don't know what screen you saw it on, but maybe you should actually watch it on, like, the way it was supposed to be in IMAX. But, okay, so this movie was actually written before... like, was written at the same time as Fury Road, and Fury Road, like, it was literally one movie. It was called Furiosa Mad Max Saga for a reason, because it was actually both the story of Furiosa and Fury Road. Could you imagine a fucking movie like that? That's, like, impossible, right? So he thought the same thing, so he broke it in half. From what Miller has described, and he actually... there's a great book on the making of Mad Max Fury Road that discusses everything. And they actually discuss Furiosa a great deal in the movie because it's very important, because he literally has said, it's a puzzle piece that I snapped in half. And he goes, and the thing is that we never changed the story. So it matches perfectly. It rubs up perfectly. All the jagged edges merge perfectly for Mad Max and Furiosa, he's like, Furiosa is literally the answer to the question that you have for Mad Max Fury Road. It's like, why is she doing this? Like, that's the biggest question. And he's like, you know, if I couldn't do them together, I had to separate them. And he's like, I'm going to do Fury Road first because it's all payoff. It's all punch, right? And he's like, and I need to get to the second one, which he said is, if you think about it, it's a lot more complex. It's a little bit more dangerous because what you're dealing with, it's not a traditional movie, right? Neither one of them are. But I find, like, if you look at it like that, like, they're one giant movie. Like, I know a lot of people say that. But if you watch it, if you really, like, the weird, wonderful part about this movie is that it is. It's, like, the setup for Fury Road's payoff. We just got the Fury Road payoff 10 years ago. So we never really, like, it was, like, you know, it's all constructed like a big, giant chase, right? And it's, like, the cinematic, like, whatever. Like, it's, like, it's the action scene to end all action scenes. I think where Scott and other people that are rubbing up against this don't realize is this is not a prequel. This is literally the same story. It's just that we didn't get this part of the story. So it's all like intricate storytelling for the free-for-all that is Mad Max Fury Road, at least to me. And that's why it worked, is that this is almost all exclusively story, where the other one was no story, right? It was all action. This is all story. And I love, like, I guess, like, the big thing for me is, where do you fall in Mad Max? Where do you fall in that world? Do you want to explore the nooks and crannies? Because if you do, Fury Road will give you that. It will explore. It takes you to different places. It takes you to nooks and crannies. It takes you to the awful people of the wasteland. Which, so I'm going to say something. This movie coming out like 3 months before Borderlands, I feel like it's doing Borderlands a disservice, because I feel like they're playing with similar tropes. But yeah. I don't know, man. Like, Fury Road, Furiosa, like, executes these things, for me at least, executes them in an artfulness that is similar to Mad Max Fury Road, but is nothing to do with Fury Road, but has everything to do with Fury Road, if that makes sense. Like, the movie that we got is nothing like Fury Road. And I feel like the biggest umbrage everybody has with it is that it's nothing like Fury Road. Like, it's doing what a second part or a piece of a story should do, which is give you something, a new flavor. At least to me, like you coming into it, it's interesting for me that you're not the biggest fan of Fury Road. I'm not criticizing you. Like, I always take, like, we've talked about this before. If something doesn't work for somebody, it doesn't work for somebody. You can't argue them into compliance on something, right? Yeah. Like, you can't argue with somebody. Like, it's just, that's the way that it works, right? And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
It's not even that I think Fury Road doesn't work. It's just that I have almost zero interest in Mad Max as a property. So, like, exploring the world doesn't really interest me. Like, so unfortunately for Mad Max, what does interest me is the big, stupid action, like, all of the stuff that's just set dressing, you know, that's what interests me. Like, I'm going there to see the car chases and the zaniness, and, like, so unfortunately Furiosa doesn't, it does have some of that, but it doesn't have it to the degree that Fury Road has it, and it shouldn't.
Yeah,
but because my interest in the world of Mad Max, in that world, is almost nil, my interest in this movie is not super high. Like, I'm glad I saw it. I think it's well made for the most part. There's some, and I know Miller does the speed up in the cameras. Like, the like where everything's just going super fast.
Yeah.
It kind of works in the action scenes, but when you're watching like the war boys like run around like as fast as ants, it feels really weird. And it feels like I'm watching this Keystone Cops kind of thing. And maybe that's what he's going for. But like it was off-putting for me every time. Like it was just like watching something and fast forward. It was very off-putting for me. But I do think that the two female leads in this movie, both of whom play Furiosa, are absolutely magnificent. They do
They really are.
an amazing job.
Anya Taylor-Joy continues her ascent as a superstar, right? Like she's going to eventually she's going to shoot like this is her coming out party. Like this movie is definitely her coming out party. Like, you know, and then Aliana Brown, who plays the younger version, who takes up like people say she's taking up as much screen time. She does not. She just takes up the first 30 minutes of the movie. Like she is like she not only looks like a little version of Anya Taylor-Joy, but like they feel like they're one part of like the thing that I truly love is the fact that they're one part of a like they're two parts of a single performance. And there's no like when they make the jump to Anya Taylor-Joy, it feels like organic. It feels like almost like they waited 10 years for this girl to grow up and she became Anya Taylor-Joy, which I do love about the movie. You know, like she is great. The question I have for you, does the nose play? Does he make it epic?
I said that about the two female leads because I didn't want this to turn into like I do agree with what I said. I think they're fantastic. However, anytime Chris Hemsworth is not on the screen, ultimately I did not give a shit at all. And I don't think it's a failing of the actresses. I think it's just it's a failing of my interest in the world of Mad Max. But Hemsworth is so fun to watch and root against, like just actively root against. He does the like zealot thing, or like I don't even know what you call it. Like he's just the head of a biker gang, but also it's like a cult. Like it's so bizarre. And he does it so freaking well. He's Negan, but like better.
Like he's the agent of chaos that like even like you know even and Morton Joe is like you know the character from the first movie is like who the fuck why the fuck are we dealing with this guy? This guy is a fucking asshole. He's ruining everything. Because he is. He's just an agent of chaos. Like he like what I find very interesting is what how Hemsworth plays him because he plays him he doesn't play him as a like you know a pure like there's a purpose for the reason why he is the way he is. Like he like and it's very small like if you don't really if you're not paying attention you miss it because like he's not lying when he says he lost his family. He lost his little girl and he lost his wife. But unlike some people who carry on, it internalized and made him into this person that just wanted to watch the world burn and didn't care who it cost him. And you can see it. Like he literally throws people in front of a like you know in front of a speeding car. Like he does not care. He only cares about himself, and even then he doesn't really care about himself because at the end when he realizes what's gonna like he realizes that he is in the hands of somebody that he truly hurt. This is what he was waiting for. But my favorite part is her vengeance is something that you did not expect. But holy shit, is it disturbing? Like to watch those final moments, like, and for her to get her just desserts and a lot, like, and it was like, I know this is going to sound weird, but have you read the comic? Of course, you probably have the comic book version of History of Violence.
Yes. Yes.
It's been a long time,
but yes.
Okay. But do you remember what happens to his brother? And yes. Okay. It reminded me of that in a lot of ways where I was like, oh shit, this is not just a momentary moment of pain and agony. This is going to be a lifetime of agony. And like, I kind of loved it because that's what would happen if you were allowed 25 or 15 years of thought into what you would do to the person that took the only person, like, you know, that traumatized you, right? That put you through everything that she goes through. Like, it would be that kind of just dessert. To which, like, I love the fact that it's a revenge story and she truly does get her revenge. And it's like the perfect thing. Like, you could, like, when you go, she's gonna let him live? But then you find out what living is.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, shit. Hemsworth, the nose plays, and I feel like it frees him up with that in the voice. Like, the voice is wild to me. Like, 3-octave too high, very nasally. Like, everything he says is hilarious in the movie. Like, when he's talking to a Morton Joe, and Morton Joe sees him, Furiosa, and he goes, what's wrong with her? What's wrong with her? Nothing's wrong with her. She's perfect. She's perfect the way she is. Like, the fucking, just some of the fucking dialogue that comes out of his mouth is so stupid, but so funny, and so, like, apropos. Like, the secret thing that I love about the Mad Max world is how Coen brother-esque their stupidity is. Like, these people, like, and that's a hard thing to do. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think we've talked about this before. The genius of how the Coen brothers write stupid is a thing of beauty to me. And the way that George Miller writes stupid or ignorant is like just as leveled up in that. And like, because Fury Road didn't have any of that kind of stuff. I mean, it literally had, like, I think it said that it had 62 lines of dialogue I read someplace, right? Like, the fact that this is such a wordy movie, but it's also like, it's not stupid wordy. It's not like inane wordy. It's like funny in a weird way. Cause, like, you know, you're dealing with a bunch of morons. I loved it. Like, I loved that. Like, I'm in the bag for The Wastelands, the Road Warrior world. I have been since I was a kid. It's the thing that kind of made me obsessed with the post-apocalypse. So I'm in the bag for all of this. Like, I found it wonderful. Like I compared it to, in a weird way, a lot of it, this movie reminds me of Once Upon a Time in the West, the Sergio Leone movie. That's my favorite Western.
I was that's funny you bring that up. Literally, last time I was in Columbus, me and my dad were talking about Westerns, and we got on the Man With No Name stuff, and I was like, yeah, I really enjoy that. I said, but, like, I don't know if I love Once Upon a Time in the West as a whole. I said, but I was telling him, like, it has my favorite opening scene, maybe ever. Like, it'd be tough to say ever, but it's right up there.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be top two or three. And he was like, I don't think I remember the opening scene. And I found it on Amazon online or something.
Yeah.
And started, which I don't know what version is streaming, but holy shit, does that movie look amazing.
Yeah, they just released a 4K, so I would not be surprised if that's the 4K version. If you found it on Paramount, I think it's on Paramount Plus.
Maybe that's what it was on. It looked absolutely amazing. But, like, the almost no dialogue coming in, like, I think the old man in the train station, like, tries to say something, and then they just, like, stuff him in the closet or whatever.
Yes.
And then they run the lady off, and then it's just, like, 5 minutes of nobody talking. of them just walking around and like that windmill, the yeah, like, and then the fly
with Jack Elam,
yeah. And then, you know, you like slowly start to hear the train coming in and you hear the whistle and like then, you know, it starts to pull off and they're like, I guess he wasn't there. And then you hear the harmonica and they turn around and they have that like slow, just, you know, what's the guy, who's he looking for?
Henry Fonda.
Yeah, I can't remember his name. He's like, are
I
you?
I can't remember his name, like, either.
Nope. He sent us. And
Frank. Jack Elam.
Yeah, you Frank. Frank. No, Frank sent us. And it's Jack Elam says, looks like we're one horse shy.
Sure.
And he goes, nope. You brought two too many. And then just fucking guns them down. It's so good.
Yes. It really is, like, I fucking love that movie, dude. It's, like I said, it's probably my favorite Western, like, Once Upon a Time in the West. Though, and this feels like I said, like, this movie feels like it's a part of it, because it's a revenge movie that has a greater meaning, and it's about these other people in power, and they're trying to shift things and move things and change the dynamics of the West. And it feels like the same, like it feels very similar to what happens in Furiosa, where the foreground is Furiosa, but the background is the, like, you know, the power struggle between Immortan Joe and Dementis, and how everything Dementis does sets the stage for Fury Road. It's really weird in a weird way, like how he takes power away from Immortan Joe and kind of fucks with it for a while, and then how they take it back. It's a very, like, if you're into the movie, like if you're into Mad Max, it's a very interesting way that they build the world, like where Fury Road is very kind of action based, but the magic trick of that movie is how it builds the world. This kind of is more traditional, but it's so shocking because, like, you don't expect a Mad Max movie to be a character piece, but this literally is a character piece. It's about these, like, it's about Dementis and Furiosa, but Immortan Joe is there as a character. It's just, he doesn't become the issue until Fury Road. So if you look at this as one big movie, it starts off with, like, this is all Furiosa, right? Like, this whole tale is Furiosa, and it's the people that she has to deal with. Like, she first deals with Dementis, right? Now that Dementis is done, in the second movie, she's dealing with Immortan Joe and his bullshit. Now that she's finished her work, she can do the greater work of, like, you know, bringing down the patriarchy or whatever you want to call it that happens in Fury Road. But needless to say, I absolutely understand why it, like, you know, if you have no interest in this world, it would not play in any way, shape, or form for you, because it doubles down. It absolutely doubles down on everything in the world. Like, you understand, like, at the end of it, it's weird because it's not a prequel, but it absolutely works as what people feel prequels are designed to do, which is explain everything away, but it doesn't explain it in a way that makes it, like, trite. Like, I know that sounds weird, but it doesn't make it look like, oh, well, this is the reason why the War Boys are the way they are. But you get more understanding of the War Boys through this film because of the dealings with them, right? Like, it's the same with the Imperators. You kind of get an understanding of what they are. You kind of start to learn how this world works and why they are set up the way that they are. But again, ultimately, I loved it. Like I said in my review, nothing was going to be Fury Road, and Miller was smart enough to understand like the way that it was designed, it was never designed to be Fury Road. It was absolutely supposed to be the questions to the answers that Fury Road gives that nobody knew, but it was made together, which I find fascinating. I really do. I do find everything about this like fascinating. And again, like it's all up to how you like your love of the Mad Max world is really going to be dependent on like on your love of this movie. Or if you've completely forgotten about this and you're like have no social, like you have no like imprint of this cinematic universe, I could see how this could be a good entry point. It's it's going to seem very weird if you go back to Mad Max, Road Warrior, and Thunderdome. It's going to be very weird because it's not just 40 years apart of storytelling, but also technology. So it's going to be very weird to watch these. But again, it's a good entry point. Like, I honestly think it is because it explains away things. Absolutely. Like, was there, like, I mean, we can say a lot about the action, but was there anything that you wanted to add to the proceedings?
I mean, not really. I do think the action set pieces are phenomenal. Not Fury Road level, but like, again, like you said, nothing was ever going to be Fury Road. Because that movie is all just staged action set pieces. It's literally about the Fury Road. And this is like the taking down of like each, like every time they come into a new area and like all of that's a lot of fun. Like seeing how all that operates and not having anything explained to you. I did want to say what's the guy's name? What was his name?
Imperial.
Tom Burke.
Oh yeah, Tom Burke. Imperial Jack.
Praetorian.
Imperator Jack.
No, he's Praetorian.
Jack.
Yeah, he's the driver. Almost no screen time for that guy, which I get. It's Furiosa's movie, but like, I don't know. I think it doesn't really serve the story well enough. Like, they're supposed to have this connection, and I just didn't feel it. But I do think he's really, really good, and I would have liked to see more of him. Like, for this movie to be over 2 hours long and still feel like there's parts that go way underserved. And it's not that I think there's anything that they dwell on too long. It's just that, like, and this almost could have been two movies, you know?
It could have been. And how much do you want to bet that there's probably like 30 to 40 more minutes of
footage? For sure.
And a couple of extra action scenes. The thing that I forgot that I'd seen him in these two movies called The Souvenir. They're very kind of like awards fodder and stuff. He's great. Like, the weird part was when he came on screen, I was like, who is this Stacy Keach looking like motherfucker? And why isn't he in a Stacy Keach biopic? Or, I kept on watching him. I'm like going, this dude looks like Stacy Keach, like a younger Stacy Keach. And I could not shake it. I was like, he's great in it though. Like he's like, what I love is that he's such an unorthodox casting. It's almost like the way that they cast Hemsworth. Like, you would expect them to have roles switch.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I love the fact that they give him the Praetorian Jack role, and they give, Dementis to Chris Hemsworth. And again, I cannot, like, if there's anything, okay, like, I know it's Furiosa's movie, and Anya Taylor-Joy is amazing. She's great. But the reason to see this movie is Hemsworth's Dementis. Like, he is like, I would not be surprised if in 10 or 15 years we're talking about it as like an all-time great villain performance, because it's great. It's that great. He's that good. He is that funny. And you, the best part of all is about 10 minutes into this movie, I forgot that it was him. Like, I just went on with like this dude named Dementis.
Yeah. So he definitely disappears in the role. I think the movie suffers when he goes out of it.
Yeah.
You know, I get, again, it's Furiosa's movie, but like, not cutting back to him and what he's doing and then just showing up later, I think ultimately the movie suffers for it. I think their face off, more or less, in the desert at the towards the end is fantastic. Like, his speech to her about, like, I understand why you want this and you should have your revenge. Just know that it's not going to get you anything. Like, I can't bring your family back. I can't get you back to your life. I can't fix any of that. So kill me and get your revenge. But ultimately, it's going to be fruitless because you're still going to be where you're at and you're not going to get back home. You know, I really, really like that. So refresh my memory, because I didn't get a chance to go back and watch the end of Fury Road. Where does her story end in Fury Road?
Them going back to the Citadel with the wives and taking over the Citadel. Like, she finally becomes, she becomes basically Immortan Joe. But
that's what I thought. So I went and saw the movie with somebody and I was like, it sucks that she, like, I was hoping for a like when they do the credits thing, they kind of just show you the highlights from Fury Road. I was like, oh, maybe there's going to be like a post credits thing of her finally like making it back. And the person I was with was like, that's what happens in Fury Road. And I was like, no, she just kills everybody in Fury Road and kind of like they take over, like, because she doesn't know how to get back home.
And no, she does. She gets back. Well, so she doesn't go to the green place because the green place is destroyed.
Okay. When does the green place get destroyed?
In the 15 years between Fury Road and Furiosa. Like, it's never, so like the movie, okay, so like Fury Road, what ends up happening is that she gets to the fam, like, so the people that we saw her, like, you know, like, not her mother, but all those people, the old ladies, the mothers are the only remaining people from the beginning where we saw all that life, all that plant life, the green place, because they all, like, it all turned sour. And they all die because of the poison, the radiation poisoning, basically, is what it's inferred to. So it's all those old ladies at the end. And that one old lady with the case with all the seeds and stuff, like, waiting. Okay. And then they go back. They race back to the Citadel to take power because no one is there. And war boys are war boys. And they'll listen to whoever's there. So they kill everybody, they go back, and then Max goes back onto the road, and Furiosa, the sisters, the wives, and the mothers are all, like, going up to the Citadel to take control. And that's the
okay.
end.
Okay.
So she does go back, and she does take control back from, because, I mean, Immortan Joe's dead. Everybody's dead. Even the Bullet Farm. So, like, if they were going to do a sequel, I can only imagine that it would be Anya Taylor-Joy taking over for Charlize Theron in a couple of years, if Miller's alive, because he's like 82 or something like that. Like, let's appreciate, like, can we just stop for a second?
Yeah,
this is a man.
80-year-old man made this, like, action epic.
This, like, what feels like a very fresh action epic, right? Like, it feels so modern. It feels so, like, on the cusp of new. It's wild. Like, my wife's grandfather is 87. I've known him since he was, like, 78, right? So I've known him for, like, 9 years. At 78, there is no fucking way that that old man could do anything other than maybe play computer solitaire. Like, and we have George Miller directing a highly complex movie, like, in doing it in a way that, like, I look at most modern directors right now, and I don't know if there's anybody that could do what he's doing. Like, it's, like, really weird because, like, regardless of what you think of the movie, when you watch some of those action scenes, you look at it and you go, not even the John Wick guys could probably do this if they all got together and do it. Like, he is so presence of mind, so fucking singularly, like, driven to do this stuff that I mean, like, if this is the last movie we get from Miller, which is a very strong possibility, like, it's going to be a hell of a movie. But there's also a part of me that kind of wants a sequel where they take the Bullet Farm and they take Gasoline Town and, like, the all-out war that it causes because they're going to have to. I would really love that. Yeah. Did you get the little cameo from Matt, from Max? Did you see that moment? He's in it. Not. Okay. So you remember when she's walking back in the desert by herself, like, after the road?
Oh yeah.
Like, after everything. Yeah. The guy that's at the top of the mountain that's like mumbling to himself.
Oh yeah, okay.
That's Max. That's his appearance. It's played by somebody completely different. It's not Tom Hardy, of course. Yeah. But the grumbling and pissing on the it's kind of hilarious to me that, like, he makes an appearance because it's his car, it's everything, but it's just intentionally meant to be like a wink. Like, that's the only thing. I guess there was a studio note, one single studio note, which was, can we have Max in this? And he was like, sure, mate. And that was his version of it, which I love. I love taking a studio note and fucking with it like that. But yeah, it's great. It's truly a wonderful piece of cinema that you actually should see on the big screen. Like that's the thing. I don't think that
I would say if you're going to see this movie, you have to see it, preferably in, like, IMAX or whatever big loud format you can.
Yes, absolutely. Like, there is nothing there. Like, this is a summer movie. It's designed to be a summer movie. It's big. It's got big visuals. It's loud. Yeah, go see it. Like, it's definitely worth it. And even if you come back and you're like, oh, it wasn't for me, the level of action alone should satisfy somebody, because it's like, it's big. It's not the continual chase, but they've got some great action scenes that I'm not going to ruin for you, because there's a lot of really good, like, the way that they construct these set pieces. It's not just, like, chase scenes. It's got this flavor to it that's very different than Fury Road.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So, yeah, I don't know what comes next. Nothing opens next weekend, right? I know it's some, I think Garfield does.
No, Garfield already opened.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, it opened this weekend. It was the counter-programming to Furiosa because kids.
Gotcha. So, well, that makes sense.
I know the next week after that is the big one, Bad Boy Boys. Yeah. So I don't think that there is. Let's see here. I'm gonna do a quick thing, but pretty much I'm fairly certain that there's nothing really going on the release calendar for the next next bit of time. Yeah, because it's like that post Memorial Day.
Yeah.
But we're gonna have a big week with Bad Boys, because we'll have the Acolyte have dropped by then, and as we'll have Bad Boys, right? Yeah. So So yeah, no, absolutely. Oh man, why the fuck is it not showing me the calendar? Don't you hate that? Well, yeah. It doesn't matter. It does not matter. But
that just means I've got time to find something else to binge watch. So
yeah. Oh, I was going to ask, have you watched Outer Banks?
I have not.
Okay. I was just wondering because
season two just dropped, right?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. But I was just wondering if maybe you had seen that, because I was like, it does not. I mean, it wasn't that it was a bad thing. I was just looking at it going,
it was on my list. I just never got around to it. So
yeah. There's literally nothing coming out next week. Like literally nothing. Because it's all waiting for, because like the 7th, it's both Bad Boys and the new M Night. Well, Shauna Knight Shyamalan, his daughter's film comes out. So, and then we're all starting, right? Because then it's Inside Out 2, and then Bike Riders, and then of course Quiet Place. It starts ramping up for summer. You know what? I've never asked, are you a Quiet Place fan or are you not? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. I love those movies. I think they're great.
All right. Well, then we're definitely, because we're going to, I'm hoping that they're going to have, because here's a weird fact is that I've not seen either or of those movies on the big screen. The first two, even though I love them. I missed it. I missed the first one when it was in theaters. And then the second one, remember, it was released
Right at COVID. Yeah.
Yeah. Like literally that summer they released it. And I was like, what are you doing, guys? So like, I just didn't feel comfortable with that, but I am a super fan of those films. Like I really love, I mean, that's my jam. And I still feel like now after we've seen what happened with, If, which I guarantee you, we're going to probably get on Paramount Plus in about a week and a half. Yeah. we now know that the correct answer was you should have done the Quiet Place prequel.
Yeah. I mean, I can't fault the guy for making a movie that his kids can watch. So
yeah, no, I can't either. But like now, like I'm almost certain that a Quiet Place 3 is going to happen because you have the contract with Cillian Murphy and you have the contract with John Krasinski, right? So yeah. Like you have like one of, like, you know, you have Academy Award winning actor, and he's not going to be in, like, here's the best part. You know that he's not in the new 28 Days Later movie?
Really?
He's not. He's not the star. Do you know who the star is?
Who?
You're going to laugh. Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Okay.
I'm like, so Kraven the Hunter you got instead of the guy who was willing to come back to be in the movie. Okay, good. Cool. Like, but Paramount has like the kind of funniest thing to do, which is like literally make it like force, I want to call him Favreau, but he's not, Krasinski into A Quiet Place 3 with Cillian Murphy and what's her name? And
Emily Blunt.
Like Emily Blunt and also Jaimin Hunsu.
Oh, yeah.
Like all three of them. Like making a big ass giant sci-fi movie. I mean, come on, dude. Like that's no joke. That's like, that's easy, right? Like that's a way to trump everything that they're doing and release it around the same time. Box office. Like I will genuinely be surprised if Quiet Place day one or day zero doesn't like hit. Like everything I've seen, it looks great. So yeah. I'm really looking forward to that one. But yeah, we'll be back with something, right?
Yeah, until then, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com. And you can check out our writing work, both of ours, over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieisle.com. I have my, like I said, I had my Furiosa review up. Logan has his latest moving pictures up that was around May the 4th, because it was about Empire Strikes Back, and just a great article. I always going to pimp your stuff just because I just love what you're doing. So We've got the final run of the chunk of writing that he's doing. So please check that out. I've got a bunch of home video content. As always, it remains that I always do that. There'll be some more stuff coming up this week, some pretty big titles. So you just have to stick around and look at movieisle.com.
Until next week, I don't know. Go see something, because, man, nothing's making money at the box office.
Nothing is making money. Nothing at all. You know? Or stay home and watch Fall Guy.
Yeah, you could do that too. We'll see you guys next week.
See you guys next week.